You're listening to the British Baseball Podcast. So it's really the way that I like to start off these conversations, especially when I'm meeting somebody new for the first time, because I've only briefly met you. I don't think I got the chance to talk to you down in Essex for the Battle of Britain in 2020. Was on there for my birthday weekend. It was a lovely cold weekend. Complete contrast to the weekend we just had when I saw the Knights playing again, when it was El Scorchio. So yeah, one of my favorite things to do with new guests is to find out about them and how they became interested in baseball. Do you want to share your experiences with us?
Yeah, absolutely. So I got involved in the very first place. My best friend when I was about 14 years old was sick from school. And he ended up not being able to sleep, switching Channel 5 on in the middle of the night. And it happened to be the World Series. So he got a bit hooked on that, watched that for a few nights. And what with us being close friends living nearby, he decided he wanted to play baseball, and naturally I was the one who started to play with him. So we both got hold of a glove, started throwing in my back garden, actually just in the telephone exchange's garden next door. And so obviously with it being around October that he got interested, we had sort of a winter to see what we liked, and we kept doing it. It just became a habit. We threw and threw and threw. So the next spring, I can't remember who did, whether it was one of our parents, but someone found us a local team, which happened to be the Nottingham Sheriffs in Arnold, in Nottingham.
Okay.
And we went down there. We started to play with their pony team, which is 16 and under. And so funnily enough, one of the first game, I'm not sure if it was the first game, maybe we had a home game first, but one of my first baseball experiences as an actual player in a game was at Menwith Hill Air Force Base, which was a very rude awakening, is not the right term, because it was a great experience, but it was after you've experienced British baseball, which I hadn't at that point, you see the vast difference. Like, they had grandstands, they've got a full backstop, a perfect field, and you know, they've got all their guys in proper uniform, they're drilled, you know, all that proper setup. And we turned up. I remember being told in the car that I was being taught the signs in the car on the way there, and I thought they were joking to start with. I thought they were trying to trick me and make me look like a fool on the field, because I didn't believe that a coach was going to tell me how to play by tapping his face and his shoulder and his arm. Yeah, it was quite a rude awakening for baseball. So that carried on with the juniors. And then from there, one of the coaches of that youth team also ran a slow pitch softball team and asked me to join that. He asked my best friend, asked my best friend to join his team, which was a different team. We ended up sort of playing against each other in the league, that kind of thing. And from there was a guy on the team from South Africa who played fast pitch, and he became the GB under 19's fast pitch coach. And within a year of picking up a glove, I found myself playing for the GB under 19's fast pitch team in France in the European Championships.
Oh, wow. And what happened to your friend? It sounds like the beginning of a Disney story. Best friends forced apart by rival teams.
Yeah, he actually went into the RAF. So he was away on tour and doing whatever he did there. I have played with him since, actually, because he lives in Nottingham again. So I've played a few baseball games with him over the last 2 or 3 years, but he didn't get involved quite as much as I did. He also went to that junior championship, and so obviously we played youth stuff together, but we drifted apart in our sort of from 1920 onwards.
So what was it then that made you more, would you say you were more passionate than your friend, or that proper got its claws into you about baseball and fast pitch?
I think when we started off, I think we were pretty equal. I think it was just him being pulled away by other things, work being the main one, obviously,
yeah,
for him.
Yeah.
And he just focused on other things, and it probably did grab me a bit more. To start with, I'd say it was equal, but it kept its hold on me more so than on him.
Which World Series did you watch when you were looking after him?
So I didn't even watch it. We started playing after. So it was 2002. It was the Angels Giants.
Did he get himself a team out of that game?
He's a Cards fan. I don't know if he even has a connection to the Cards. Perhaps, I don't know, maybe we just both started watching the next year and that's where a team got picked. Yeah. I'm a Red Sox fan and I picked mine because I had downloaded a game of baseball on my PC, and because internet speeds were so slow and the image files were so big, I downloaded it without the images and literally ticked a box, and that turned out to be the Red Sox, and they've been my team ever since, based purely on a random tick box selection.
Wow. That's got to be up there with one of the most random ones. So going back to the fast pitch and the baseball, what were the main differences between the two that you noticed? Because for me, I know nothing about softball. Some might say I know nothing about baseball as well, and to be pretty accurate with that one. But what were the main differences in the two?
So the most obvious difference is the difference in pitching style. So fast pitch softball is pitched underhand, which means that the pitchers, to generate their speed, they do a windmill motion. On the more subtle side, the fast pitch softball field is smaller. It's played on a dirt infield rather than a grass infield, sometimes dirt for the entire field. And the way that translates into gameplay, it makes it a more defensive game. It's not uncommon to see 1-0 games in fast pitch because a pitcher really can dominate.
Okay.
Much more so even than in baseball. So to put it into numbers, which a lot of people would understand, like a decent baseball hitter is hitting 300+. A decent fast pitch hitter is hitting maybe 200+. And from my perspective, touching the ball makes me a decent fast pitch player on a good day.
Cool. Did you find that there are many fast pitch players in baseball and vice versa?
No, very few. I think some people have tried to do both. There aren't many I know of that do. There are a few guys off the like GB fast pitch setup that do play a little bit of baseball, but they really focus more on fast pitch. There's one guy, Darren, from Liverpool, who I know, but he grew up playing in South Africa, playing fast pitch, and has now come over here and plays more baseball. I think it's, for the most part, it's a product of which sport is available where you grow up. For me, it was, you know, fast pitch softball is almost non-existent in this country. There's 70 odd players. But it just so happened that when I first played slow pitch softball, one of the guys was the GB coach. So that's how I ended up getting involved. Had he not been, I may never have played at all.
So you're now involved in baseball with a little club. Well, I say a little club, they're more of a, how would you describe you described in like a recent post as a league representative team of sorts. Is that like another way of saying all-star team, or do you prefer to call them something else?
I haven't really labeled it. It's a concept, really. It was set up. So if I go back to the slight history of it a little bit.
Yes, please.
It set up in, I believe, 2007. Mm-hmm. And it's Dave Chris from Harrogate is the one who knows all the history to this, but I've had a chat with him and understand a little bit of it. So they set themselves up because essentially the standard of play in the North was not quite what some of their guys wanted. There were some expats that were much better players. They wanted to play at a high level. So they set up this travel team, you might call it, And they would go away to play abroad and play at higher level tournaments, and they would be just a selection of players from around the North. When it was, I believe they did that for about 6 years, 2007 to 2012, 13-ish. It was revived 2 years ago when, I'm not actually sure how it came about, but there was a suggestion that we enter a team that was essentially an all-star team, and that was the Knights being an all-star team. So when I'm running it, it's kind of with the same idea that it can be one of a few things. So if there is to be a official tournament where you represent your league, then it would be players from the league representing the Knights. The Knights would essentially be the brand of that team. But it's not restricted to that. Like if we end up trying to go abroad and play some tournaments, which I would like to do when that's much more possible, it doesn't necessarily have to be players from the league. There's going to be no restrictions, obviously, by the tournament on who plays for the Knights. In its current form, because we only have one tournament to enter and we're entering at the highest level, it is essentially an all-star team. We're going there to try and win. But I have talked to the Northern League at the AGM and said that I'd like to expand the scope of it, and that's based on feedback from last year. And there's no reason why we can't have some kind of double A all-star team or single A all-star team, or just, it's just an idea of getting people to play more baseball in different environments, and with different people as well.
That's cool. So in your opinion, then, where does the North begin and end when it comes down to play selection?
So a rule of thumb that I'm trying to follow is you either live in the area that the Northern League encompasses, which is essentially Sheffield up to the border,
yep,
or you play for one of the teams that's in the league. That may always be a hard and fast rule, but it's the starting point for where the concept is, at least in my mind.
That's cool. So what do you need to be, or what does it take to become a Northern Knight? What sort of players do you look for when you're making your team selections?
Well, same with any baseball team, really. So it all starts with pitching. It always all starts with pitching. But there's many ways to be a good baseball player. So we're taking a team this year to the Battle for Britain that will look a bit different to the one we took last year. I imagine we'll play a bit more small ball, a bit more aggressive. We've got a younger team, I think, but there's quite a healthy pool of players. When I put out the ask for interest, there were, I think, around 35 people that wanted to play. So I'm considering it's not the biggest league, I think that's a pretty healthy number.
Yeah.
The vast majority of those players are players that play at a fairly high level in their clubs as well. If there had been more players from the sort of double A standard, then I would have considered entering two teams and going at the lower level as well. But at least so far, it seems that the interest people have is to play it a bit more like an all-star team. And that doesn't surprise me, because it's we don't get that many opportunities, particularly in the North, to play those high-level games. So if you've got three or four people from each team that all want to do that, and they can all get together and make an all-star type of team and go and play those better teams, then I think there's people that are keen to do that.
That's cool. I heard a rumor as well that somebody may have said over the weekend when you played the Legends in Manchester, and for recording purposes, that was the Sunday 25th of April 2021, that you were that good that you should maybe consider entering a team into the NBL?
It was mentioned that we would potentially be competitive against those NBL teams. I certainly think it would be an interesting experiment, a fun exhibition to have a challenge series against one of those teams, if any of them are interested in doing so. There are more logistical obstacles to actually entering the NBL, not just the travel, but the requirements on having fields and all that kind of thing. But
yeah,
with the concept of a travel team as it is, I think a starting point of testing ourselves against those teams would certainly be interesting.
Oh, I forgot to mention as well. You've just recently taken over as the head coach of the Northern Knights. How did you actually get involved in the project?
So I was attending the Northern League AGM representing Nottingham, would be two or three years ago. It gets blurry at this point. And that's where the concept was brought up of entering a team. And at the time, Charlie Batho, who plays for Sheffield Bruins alongside myself, he volunteered to organise that team. And we played, I think, two tournaments that year. And while he and I were in Spain playing for the Bruins around this time last year, March last year, he asked if I would be interested in taking it over from him. So after a little bit of thought, I said, yep, let's give it a go. And then at the AGM this year for the Northern League, I sort of put together a little presentation of where we'd come from, where I think we could go, and asked if I had their backing to continue to do so, which they did. They gave. So it's continuing on from there.
Awesome. And you mentioned then that it's a different team to what we saw 12 months ago. How has the team evolved and grown since you've taken over?
So in a way, it's been similar because both of the tournaments, I'm counting the one that's coming up, have been under the COVID restrictions. So a lot of what might normally be possible isn't. The Sunday that we just had was fantastic because we had 27 players, I believe, split into two teams playing against the Lancashire Legends. So it was a really good opportunity to see people that I knew and people that I had never seen play before. Whereas the tournament last year, we basically just had to scratch together whoever could and would make it. That's not a comment at all on the people who did, but it was there was no real preparation available based on the restrictions we were facing. It would be nice going forward if restrictions ease and everything goes back to what it was, to see a lot more people play, to enter a lot more tournaments, and to take a variety of teams and players and levels.
When you get numbers like that, that are active participants, how do you balance the talent? How do you create your roster and schedule? Do you try and pull your eggs in one basket for the first game and then see what happens in the second? And talk us through your process, if you can.
It's going to be very difficult with the format of the Battle for Britain. The way that it's put together, we're playing, I think, 5 1-hour or 4-inning games followed by potentially 2 playoff games, which are 6 innings and 7 innings. That requires you to have a hell of a lot of pitching because any pitcher who's particularly worried about arm care is not going to pitch, certainly not more than twice, maybe not even more than once in that kind of setup. So the very first consideration was getting as much pitching as possible, which unfortunately this year has been a bit difficult. There's numerous people that are working or pre-booked various things. Quite a few of those that were there on Sunday, unfortunately, aren't available for the tournament. So it's going to be a case of putting people in that haven't been around before, and relying on our offense to carry us a bit. With such short games, we're certainly going to have to be aggressive because you need to get ahead early. The format of the tournament with the high potential for ties in such a short game, the scores revert back to the team that first led at the end of an inning. So you've got to really push from the first inning to try and get that lead, just in case, you know, the game could be over 2 innings later, tied at 1. But if you scored that first run, you're the winner. So it's going to be a little bit different to how you would construct it for, say, even just a doubleheader. Or the team that I took to Spain last year for the Bruins, we played one game per day over 4 days, which gives people a lot more time to recover. It gives you more time to get people into, you know, the fifth, sixth, seventh inning of a game. It gives a game a chance to become a blowout. And that's with this tournament structure, it's going to be much more difficult.
That's interesting, because one of the questions that came through was like, do you think this new structure and the rules around it are going to affect the title defence in the Battle for Britain. Are you quite confident they'll still go ahead?
I think we're taking a very good team. Yeah, I mean, any tournament like this, you have no idea what the other teams are going to turn up with. I mean, I think there's three teams in our division this year that we've not even played before, not seen before. So they could finish at the bottom, they could finish at the top. We certainly have a team good enough to do it. And let's just hope it plays out like that.
Cool. With the Knights team being like a hotbed of British baseball talent in the North, who are some of the personalities that you've enjoyed working with the most?
So one person that's been good fun to work with is Gav Marshall. He's obviously widely known in the community. And therefore probably doesn't need much explanation why he's fun to work with. But I really like his attitude is fantastic. You can get a lot of players that are good and they know they're good, that kind of thing. Not too willing to participate, to help out. Gav is the complete opposite. He'll approach me to tell me there's a good guy that I need to look at. And every time when he's at a game, he's helping someone out with it, that their mechanics or just generally being helpful. So that's someone that's really good to have around. Yeah. Ian Blees has been very helpful. He's involved with coaching, I believe, with the 18s for GB, and a Liverpool Trojans player. So he's also been very helpful, basically with his much more extensive knowledge of the league and players. He's been playing in the North for, I don't know, 30, 40, 50 years now. So he certainly has a lot more of that background. So I've relied on him and others to fill in where I have gaps. I know who I know, and I can't know anyone more than that. So particularly with the COVID stuff and the less opportunities to see players, it's certainly reputation and reports have been very helpful.
That brings me towards the end of my questions, but now I throw you at the mercy of the listeners. And as you rightly said to me in our chat before, do we get any sensible questions? And that is something I've been begging for when I do these, and it never turns out that way. So we've had stuff from what's your favourite lawnmower to all sorts of stuff. So let the good times roll. Here we go. Let's start this one off by butchering surnames, as I generally tend to do. So Lewis from BSUK. Lewis, you can help me out with this one.
I believe. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, I met him on Sunday as well. Lovely. Had a right good chat with him. And I should have asked him then, how to pronounce your surname? And as usual, I haven't, and I've messed it up. And he's asked, Gary, for this one, how's your toe?
Still a little bit painful. I was playing a slow pitch tournament in Manchester the Sunday before last. And in the last game, someone hit a comebacker straight up my foot. It didn't actually hit my foot. It hit my toe. It did hit the top of the foot. And my foot's been purple ever since. So,
ouch.
Yeah, it's getting there, but it's not quite there yet.
Jamie Ratcliffe, when are you getting your 50 quid that you...
Never, I think, is the answer to that. It would be too long to tell the full story for that one, I'm afraid.
Right, fair enough. Moving on. Friend of the show, Charlie Bavo, could you please get to explain this? Now, for those that are listening, and you are listening, there was a beautiful picture sent in, and it looks like your good self with your eyes shut doing some sort of crashing aeroplane motion with a ball flying towards you.
So I believe I'm familiar with this picture because it gets sent to me on a regular basis. My explanation for it is that I was put in the outfield and I am not an outfielder. And I think it's funny that Charlie decided to send that in because he's the one who put me there. So... That's all I've got on that one.
Don't you coach Charlie in the Knights? Or is that now a former Knight?
Yes, so I'll probably be putting him in the outfield and taking a lot of pictures, I guess.
There you go, Chuck. You brought that on yourself. Friend of the show, Tim French. How would you rate your experience in the South Lakes Safari Zoo near Cartmel?
So this one ties into the 50 quid question as well. This was from last year when we went up to... drove all the way up to Cartmel, got about half an hour away only to find out that they didn't quite have enough for a team. So we turned around and went to the zoo before going home. The zoo, I can't even remember what zoo it was, did he say? But it was quite good. The seal show particularly was worth watching.
Love a good seal show. Ian Bleese, as the oldest player in the league, what's your secret and how do you keep going year after year?
Basically just watch what Ian does. As long as he can keep doing it, I know I can.
There you go. Luke Stott, are you missing arguing with strangers on Facebook?
Very much. Very, very much. I've had a few people express their sadness that they can't watch that anymore.
David John Martin Byers, what's the future vision for the Knights and any chance of a Joust Bowl Battle of the Knights against the Knights Pro Baseball Club?
So I'm going to take the first half of that as the first serious question. So the future vision for the Knights, I did allude to it a little bit earlier, but ideally, I would like it to become the main team for some people. I'd like it to become the higher level team. And for those people that can and will commit to it, I'd like to take us to different countries. I'd like to enter different tournaments. I'd like to, you know, 3, 4, 5 times a year be going away and doing that. I think, and not a slight on the league is what it is. It can only be what it can be, but I think you get a better experience. And I think the Bruins that went away to Spain would probably agree with this, that going away, playing in nicer weather, playing on better fields, playing better competition. There's much more structure around it in these countries where baseball is more established. That's something that just for whatever thousand reasons doesn't exist in this country. But instead of focusing solely on trying to bring the UK up to that standard, I think for those of us that are ready to go and do it now, it's nice to get over there and do it. So my main thing is to enter more tournaments, probably abroad.
Josh Johnson Taylor, do you have a good recipe for a quiche Lorraine?
I do not. I think this is an in-joke that I wasn't in on at some point. on Facebook.
Those are the worst ones. Let's get a frozen one, Josh. Have it over and done with. Right, and that brings us to the final three questions. I like to call this one the bottom of the seventh. And we have three questions for you to load the bases, or you can potentially strike out. And then they'll leave it open to you to either knock out the park or walk back to the dugout. So have you got any hidden talents?
So within baseball, it's not exactly hidden, but I pitch submarine, which I think is quite unique in this country.
Mm.
I'm going to say I do it super successfully. It came out of necessity more than anything because of a shoulder problem. So it often hurts me to go over the top. So as a bit of a joke, okay. I used to go around from the side, and then it got a bit better and a bit better to the point where I was occasionally pitching in AAA games. And I can drag bunt left-handed. I don't really do that at all, ever. It's something I learned from fast pitch, where small ball is much more prevalent. But as I'm a little older and slower, it's not likely to see the field at any point. If you're talking outside of baseball, I can open a bottle of beer with just about anything you can find, which comes in very handy. If I've had enough of them, I'll have some M&M wraps, but that one normally just stays at home.
Brilliant. What are you most afraid of?
I've got no phobias, I don't think, like irrational fears. But one thing I am kind of afraid of, and this probably would explain my sort of Netflix history, is sort of being like falsely accused of something and just being trapped in that sort of unbelievable scenario where there's no way out because they've decided you did something and you don't even know what it really was. I watched a good one the other day about it, that just by a few freak coincidences, they were able to prove it wasn't him, but otherwise he was getting ready to go down for murder.
Oh, wow.
So lack of control, I suppose, is the overarching fear.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's a different podcast for a different time, but I know exactly what you're talking about. I've heard some horrendous stories, and it's just, makes you worry sometimes.
I also have a lack of control with my pitching, so perhaps they're linked together.
Do you have any guilty pleasures?
I've got one that probably fits the question, but I don't feel guilty about it at all, and it's Taylor Swift.
Good lad. Good lad. There you go. I'm quite a metal kind of guy, but when I've had a few beers and near a karaoke, Taylor Swift just pops out of nowhere. And I'm not even ashamed of it.
I think most people hide that as a guilty pleasure. I think if we all admitted it, the world would be a happier place.
Indeed. You're having bases loaded with that one. Time to knock it out of the park and walk them off. So, Neil Davies, thank you very much for being my guest today and talking me through the nights. Do you have any final words or any parting advice or any shout-outs you'd like to give?
Well, thanks for having me on. Shout-out, I suppose, goes to Dave Chris for originally setting up the nights. I believe there were other people involved. I just don't know them, so apologies. And basically just a general shout-out to people to get involved. Hopefully, if you've listened to this, you've understood what the aim is for the nights. I'm looking forward to seeing all the other teams down at the Battle for Britain and anything else that we might get to do this year. But that's it, really. You know, just to get some exposure is good. So thanks for having me on.
Pleasure's all mine. Neil, thank you very much. And take easy, and I'll see you down at the Battle.
Thank you. Yep, see you there. We'll be right back.